Hey, everybody. It's Sis. There's a whole joke to unpack there, and we'll get to that in due time. But in the meantime, listen to our vacation episode and then stay tuned for our special guest and a special movie review to follow. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and let us know what you think. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Hey, Sis. It's your brother.
What's going on?
Well, happy to be here for a vacation edition of the Sis and Your Brother podcast and a rare in-person session.
Right on. Very nice to see you in person. Yeah.
Very nice to see you too, especially here on the Cape in Provincetown, where I had never been before.
So. Excellent. Well, welcome. It's like I live here and I'm the mayor or something.
Right.
Do you want to talk a little bit about why this is called Sis and Your Brother?
Certainly. So this goes back, I think, probably 25 years of voicemails back when those were a big thing. And I would start every one of them with, hey, Sis, it's your brother. You know, call me back or whatever message I had to impart.
Or Homer Simpson quote.
Oh, that's true. Often that. And any birthday card or Christmas card or any correspondence, I always signed your brother.
Yep. So. Yeah. I think we owed our two listeners or maybe four that backstory. So since we are on vacation, this might be a little abbreviated or who knows, maybe we'll just end up talking even longer. But we wanted to start with a little theme here. So we're going to do like quick hits, maybe top five if we can get to them of sort of beach, ocean, sea themed movies. So you want to kick it off with a...
Well, I think we had a consensus number one, which won't be a big surprise as far as the summer beach movie, especially here on the East Coast. And we went with Jaws.
Absolutely.
So I guess to start with, how did you first encounter this movie?
It was the whole cultural awareness. So when did that come out?
75, I believe.
Yeah, I think 75. So I don't really remember it, but I do remember people joking about, like, you know, being afraid of going in the water. It's not safe to go back in. Yeah, and, you know, stupid news filler things about people being afraid. You know, Florida man doesn't want to go in his bathtub because of Jaws or whatever the 70s version of that would have been. And it was always, you know, came back in the summers. It would be at the drive-in, or it would be at like the Revival House on the Cape or somewhere else for the summer. So I think that's how I first became aware of it. And then seeing it on TV and reading, some yard sale version of the Peter Benchley paperback.
I think it definitely endured. You're right. It came back year after year. So yeah, so I would have been a year old when it came out, but it circled back, and it was not, I think it was also one of the big original network TV like airings of a theatrical release, and like highly anticipated. And so I think it's something that came back around every summer. And then we were also, I think, old enough to see all the crappy sequels. So it was just something that we were aware of, but you always circle back to the original.
Aha, circle back. Very nice. The other thing is, as I started to get older and take vacations by myself, the first time I went to Martha's Vineyard, I remember, and I think they still show it there. You know, it was filmed there and they do a revival of that every summer. And I think that's still going on. So when I went with friends when I was younger and stayed in some kind of terrible flop house, bluffs, back to being older, like having more resources and renting a house, seeing that and going with John and seeing the bridge and seeing where it was filmed, because that's one of his favorite movies as well. So yeah, it's always been sort of omnipresent, I guess I would say. And then with COVID, all of those memes coming back about opening the beach, closing the beach.
Those beaches will be open. We need those summer dollars. Yeah, it has really become topical again, where it turns out we have the mayor from Jaws, kind of at the wheel. And it just shows how little has changed in 40 years.
Maybe I shouldn't be cackling at that.
Right.
All right. So what's next in our summer fun roster here?
Well, it's funny. So looking at our list, we went right from the kind of big summer, obvious summer movie into just submarine-based ones. And to preface that, I am just a submarine fan. I mean, anytime a new movie comes out, if it's got a submarine in it, I'm in. I think the setting lends itself so well to suspense and tension and heavy brow sweating that it's it could be a genre in itself, but it's definitely what I associate with the sea, and also the fear and mystery of the sea.
Yeah, absolutely. It could crush you and kill you. You know, like you said, the opportunities for traumatic condensation abound. But yeah, it's a great genre. It does make me think, especially, I've read a lot about submarines. I like these movies. And then I see those commercials about, people turning into their parents and like wearing a sweater vest. What's your favorite kind of book on submarines? Like, who else reads books about submarines? Right. My dad.
Well, and so this next one on our list, Das Boot, is one that And this says so much about our childhood that I think we, at a very young age, sat through a lengthy, I believe, subtitled version.
It's the two part of the full, like, German version, not the shorter movie length U.S. version.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Dad was not going to give us the theatrical cut. We got the director's cut.
For sure.
And it's, but it's still, it's very accessible. I found, even, you know, at a young age, not having to read all the subtitles, you feel the claustrophobia, and you, you follow the whole crew on a journey. You know, starts off with they're all freshly faced and clean shaven, and then just by the end, there's none of the glamour of any perceived glamour in submarine warfare. They're in a kind of a at the bottom of the ocean in a soup of oil and piss and food and muck, and it's they just film it really well, and you only get periodic breaks from the claustrophobia of the scenes inside the boat, and even those are just kind of a few scenes on the surface from a distance.
There are, and I think it goes, there's a whole journey, like you said, the crew goes on, and I think they see some grizzled other veterans in the beginning, but they're in the background, but you kind of come back to it even in the middle of the movie, when I think they are off the ship and they're at a dinner with other officers, and you can see how, what a mess and how filthy and disgusting and disillusioned these guys are already, and we still got 2 hours to go. And the other sort of fresh-faced meat coming in, who's still, or the people who've never had to go out, you know, directing them, are still in a very different place in terms of their perception of, like, the glory of all this.
Exactly. That's a very powerful scene, in that they go into, you know, a boat, and there's a whole banquet of people in their dress uniforms. And it's, I think they reflect on them when they go back. It's like, you know, that you know, they're short of supplies, they're short of torpedoes. And it's like, here, we've got this whole buffet with a carving station topside. And it shows the two different worlds above and below that they're living in.
Yeah. Which is an odd segue, I think, into U-571, which is a significantly less serious film, I think is a nice way to put it.
Yes, but again, as soon as I heard that I saw the first trailer for it, you knew I was in. I think you and I saw this in Jersey in the theater. That was one of the times I saw it. I saw it a few times. I think it's from 97, I believe. And it's a little more lighthearted, a little more fun. But I do like the premise that it's U.S. sailors who end up on a German sub. So they're and a German sub that is already in terrible condition. Mm. And it's got some good character actors in it. It's got Harvey Keitel, who we always like, Bill Paxton, and a somewhat restrained Matthew McConaughey, is a little lighter on the all right, all right, all right. So in a role that was originally supposed to go to Michael Douglas, and
when
he dropped out, the focus of it changed from the older captain of the ship to the younger XL. But I think it stands up. It's got the special effects had come a long way in the years since Das Boot. So some good scenes of the depth charges and the effects that had. Of course, a lot of the Star Trek-esque scenes of people grabbing onto things to avoid falling down. but overall, an entertaining movie, and I think it stands up on rewatch. That's another one that I found at a yard sale on VHS for Up North VHS Theater. So it's been a good rewatch.
Yeah, and the kind of thing that comes on cable, I'll leave it on for sure. I mean, there's other submarine movies. There's Hunt for Red October and others, but I do think the ones the two we just talked about are top of that list. And then you had another sleeper choice.
Yeah, so this one, it's called Below. It's from 2002, I believe. It's a supernatural thriller aboard a World War II sub, which, I mean, that's as if they called me at home and asked for ideas. I mean, the only thing, I guess, if it was an erotic supernatural thriller aboard a World War II sub, that's the only way they could one up it. But, it's got a good twist ending. So it is a ghost story, but with a really well done submarine sequences. And they, even just the way that it's filmed, there's a good long tracking shot going from the conning tower with the officers going all the way back to the back of the boat, and with information being passed and rumors being spread till you kind of get to the grease monkeys back in the engine room. And a good cast of character actors who, or as Bill Simmons calls, that guys that you, when you see them, if you watch it now, you say, oh, that guy went on to be in a lot of things. Bruce Greenwood, who's one of my favorite Canadian character actors. Holt McCallany, who long before Fight Club, or maybe I guess it'd be after Fight Club, but before Mindhunter, has a good role in that too. And it's just an entertaining rewatch that I can't recommend enough.
Excellent. I'll have to get it back in the rotation. All right. So that's our, you know, cheerful, abbreviated beach movie watch list.
Yeah. We stretched the definition of beach, just made it ocean, because I don't think we could really think of any other beach movies besides Jaws.
No, now I'm just thinking about that segment from Creepshow where the buried, that's just a segment. And we'll get into Creepshow and George Romero, I'm sure,
yeah,
at another point.
That's true. Which that Creepshow sequence also features a terrifying Leslie Nielsen, if you can imagine such a thing.
It does indeed. I'll look forward to that.
So I know we had a segment on vacation food, which would be really short.
We're not really eating any vacation food because we are not going out to eat or going to any restaurants or getting any takeout. We are just eating in our motel or outside on the deck of our cousin's rental.
Yeah, so thanks, COVID.
For nothing.
We've walked past some places that I think that do sell lobster rolls and things like that.
Things like that, yeah. But yeah, we're not having any of it.
No. So, you know, maybe next vacation pod, hopefully by next vacation pod, we'll actually have some material for the vacation food. Although, we did learn apparently that the kids are calling hot dogs glizzies these days.
So, that was new. That was new.
So we've had a few store-bought hot dogs, which I'm always up for. So.
Yeah, it's not a complaint. But yeah, I think that concludes this segment for 2020.
Sure. You're right. Better luck next year, guys.
Okay, and then we'll drop in Megan's capsule review.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think another thing that we've been chatting about a little bit, and while I think we've both been a little unplugged from social media, I still do check in on Twitter every morning to see what people are mad about. And it does, you know, I've got my own thoughts about it, and so do you, that we can talk about. But there's this tension between wanting to see sports come back and, you know, whatever the word normal means at this point. I think it's lost a lot of its meaning. And still being apprehensive or like having mixed feelings about whether that's really the right thing to do for those athletes and for all of the support staff that are going to be surrounding them, how well any of these plans are really going to work out. So certainly with the NHL right now, you know, holding two contradictory thoughts in mind at once, which I realize is less and less popular in our culture. Yeah, of course, I'd be excited to see hockey come back. And of course, you know, I'm looking at what the teams are putting out and what the players are saying. And it's interesting and it's fun and it's been a long time, but it is really hard to imagine this is going to work that well, even if I am very excited about the reseeding and the playoff brackets and all of that, how the players can get through what we're in, which is phase three right now, without getting infected, without having too many people have to withdraw, without people around the teams, you know, being impacted, without their families being impacted. And it's really going to depend on how the players and those teams kind of manage that. Bill Guerin from the Minnesota Wild made a statement about how he really hopes that the teams are going to try not to go to bars, which I didn't find super inspiring.
It could have been a stronger statement. I think we talked off air about just the unforced errors. You have so much stuff going against this right from the get that you're trying to, the NHL and NBA are trying to create the bubble. It's an imperfect system and there's such a high risk and there's so many things, you know, unanticipated COVID related complications, and to add things, well, please don't go, you shouldn't go to the bars. I mean, unfortunately, if you're going to do this, and even then it's still not guaranteed, you really do have to quarantine everybody, and you go from the ice, you know, to the locker room, home, and or back to your hotel, and that's it. Any box meals that are delivered to you. I don't see another way to do it. And it, again, I want it to come back too. I want the NBA to come back. I want the NFL to come back in the fall. I want baseball to come back. I mean, it is weird, you know, even just being up here, you know, without a Red Sox game on in the background anywhere, anything like that. At the same time, I also acknowledge it's probably not the best thing, but the show must go on. And it is a balancing act. These are everyone's jobs, and there are a lot of jobs that are related, you know, beyond the players that are supported by the infrastructure of these leagues. And we also do need things to watch. And we can only, on NHL Network, you can only watch Slapshot, Miracle, and repeat of finals games for so long. So,
yeah, I think I've mentioned I've watched the Penguins versus Flyers stadium series from 2019 four times now.
Well, at least you know the outcome. But yeah, that does get old. We all want sports to come back, and they're missed. And the substitutes, you know, I can't get excited. I've seen ESPN or 2 has had competitive cornhole on that. I just can't. I was never able to watch. You know, we always knew that Saturday morning cartoons were over when we were kids, when Candlepin Bowling came on. I thought, well, that's it. I'm out of here.
Who did watch that?
What's the audience for that? What?
It's not even regular bowling.
No, it's not. It's you get the third ball. It's uniquely regional. No one in the Midwest knows what Candlepin is. Yeah. So I guess it'd be even more boring than actual regular bowling. So yeah, we're starved for sports, but we also realize that it's a huge risk for all involved to bring them back.
Yeah. So I guess I would just close by saying, I really hope it goes more smoothly than I think it's going to. We've seen players out of bars, like, and the lack of consistent guidance. At least the NHL is giving guidance, even if the states and provinces are not able to do so. Fingers crossed. I really hope everyone stays healthy and that it goes the way that it's planned. We'll see.
I do too. I hope we all wear our masks, listen to the experts, and hopefully we ride this thing out until there's a vaccine.
Got nothing to add to that. Right. I think that's it.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, we're on vacation, bitches. That's what you get.
Yeah, right. I guess, and we can always cut this in post-production, but, you know, one of the purposes of our visit is we're here to throw our mom off a cliff. So,
would you care to explain that a little further?
Yeah. Grandma C, our mom, passed away this past fall, and we'd finally gotten around to picking up the ashes, which I was relieved.
When you say we, you don't actually mean one of us.
Right. That's true. That's true. It was Cousin Susan. We thank her for making the pickup. And so we scouted out a location to drop her ashes into the sea. It's a bit of a windy day. We're hoping to avoid a big Lebowski style blowback, but it's not a sad day. It's a joyous one. She lived a long life, and she always loved going to the sea.
Mm-hmm. She loved the outdoors. So we're going to take the kids and take a walk on a really nice forest trail out here in the National Seashore that ends, as Colin said, at the ocean on a cliff, and think about her, remember her a little bit, and say goodbye.
And she was British to the end, never, despite our nagging about becoming a U.S. citizen, never did. So that's the other thing. We're flinging her in the direction of England. So I think it's, and I can't think of a more perfect send-off for her.
Yep, definitely. All right, thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon. All right, we're recording.
Okay, so as part of our summer vacation edition of the Sis and Your Brother podcast, we have a special guest, my daughter, Megan. Hi, Megan.
Hello.
And how old are you?
10.
Okay. Well, we're here, you're here kind of as an expert to talk about a movie that's near and dear to all of our hearts, the 1982 John Carpenter documentary, The Thing. Usually you give me some grief about calling it a documentary.
Yes, 100%.
Okay. Well, how did you first experience this movie? What's your first memory of watching it?
You showed it to me because we were doing like a quarantine movie night. So it's like kind of the first movie we really watched it.
Okay. Why was it so great for repeated viewing? Is it something that you've campaigned to watch again and again, much to the chagrin of your siblings? So what is it you like so much about it?
I like it because it was enjoyable to watch because there's so much suspense and you didn't know what's going to happen. And also for the time frame, the way the thing looked in general was really cool.
Yeah, I think we talked about that it looks better because it's not done with computer animation. So it's done in 1982 within the limits of what they could do back then. And I think that it gives it a kind of a realism that's a little scarier.
Practical effects. Yeah,
that's a good term. Practical effects make it seem like it's something that could really happen. I think we're so inundated with CG stuff that it's easy to blow that stuff off. But just the level of grossness and body horror that they get into that with the dogs and just the weird ways that it bends the rules of any kind of living thing we've ever seen. So who's your favorite character?
Windows.
Windows. I figured you'd say that. And why?
Because his job was really hard. And so he got some ton of grief for it. When you think about it, he has to try and contact with people when he's out in the middle of nowhere. And also, it's adorable.
Yeah. They do feel bad for him. And that's kudos to you for finding a supporting character that to be your favorite. Yeah, he's always getting yelled at because it's not his fault they can't contact anybody. And certainly he moves the plot forward by highlighting just how isolated they are. No one's coming to help.
They are stranded there and as they're picked off one by one. What's the best sequence for you? What stands up? If this comes on TV and you see it, what's the one you're, I'm gonna wait and watch this part?
Probably the ending scene where they all, where everything blew up.
Okay.
But that was cool.
All right, we'll go with the ending. It's left somewhat open-ended. What do you think happens?
Personally, I think they tried to go somewhere and they probably didn't hypothermia and freeze to death.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And I think they both know that. I get the impression neither of the last two, Childs nor MacReady, are infected because one of them just would have eaten the other. Mm-hmm. So they are human, and the thing itself has just gone to freeze because it's going to wait until some other poor chumps dig it out. And I think they're just content that they're going to go to sleep and freeze to death. Okay, well, why is Kurt Russell so great?
Wow, Dad. There's Lear.
Is it the hair, the beard? How great he sounds when he yells at people?
His performance in Overboard?
You always bring up Overboard, sis. I mean,
that's terrible.
It hasn't aged well, but it's not on the Mount Rushmore of Kurt Russell movies. It's not Big Trouble in Little China. It's not Escape from New York. It's not Tombstone, but there's a lot of other good Kurt Russell movies out there.
Taking into consideration the fact that Mount Rushmore as a metaphor is probably taking on a whole new cultural
meaning. That's true. Yeah,
in 2020.
I'm going to have to find a new bit. That's true. I don't want Kurt Russell dragging all that bad baggage in. Well, one last note I had on it that I didn't learn this until recently. The Italian composer Ennio Morricone.
Close enough.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm slaughtering it. But he did the music, the score to the thing. There's that haunting dum 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 dum, which is just interesting that came from the guy who also did did all that stuff. Did a ton of different movies. So I thought it was just another reason to like the thing. It's a convergence of everyone at their creative peaks. I think it's one of John Carpenter's best, and I say that as a huge fan of John Carpenter.
Yeah, we'll have to do a John Carpenter special at some time. I know we talked a little bit about Christine and others, but yeah, there's plenty to dig into there.
Yeah, there absolutely is. Yeah, that's true. And you know, Halloween, we got Escape from New York, and there's a lot of great stuff. So, well, any last thoughts on the thing?
It's a great movie. Everyone should watch it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's very true. It's underrated, and I recommend it to everybody.
Just like Alien, teaches you about quarantine, how to break it. So don't break quarantine to make it worse for everyone else.
That's very true. This is a very topical movie during COVID and during quarantine. Right? Yeah. You see what happens when you don't follow procedures.
That's a perfect closing thought.
All right. Thank you, Megan, for joining us.
Thank you. We look forward to more of your insights.
All right.